Thanks for staying with us on Central Standard. There's a pretty intense National Football League investigation into the Miami Dolphins franchise. Offensive lineman Jonathan Martin alleges he was bullied and hazed and points the finger at his teammate, Richie Incognito. Incognito denies the allegations, but has been suspended after sending Martin an angry voicemail, racial slurs and all. This high-profile story got us to thinking about workplace bullies. Adults, what constitutes bullying in the workplace? Let's look at policy, behavior, and legalities. Your phone calls are welcome. Have you been bullied? How did you handle it? What was the resolution? 235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Dennis Egan, a trial lawyer for the Popham Law Firm in Kansas City, is with us. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
Great to have you here.
Glad to be here.
And joining us by phone, Dr. Gary Namy. He's with the Workplace Bullying Institute. Dr. Namy, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Bill.
Hey,
and good morning, Dennis.
And let's start with you, Dr. Namy. Give us some examples of obvious workplace bullying.
Well, it takes the form of repeated mistreatment. It's verbal abuse, threats, intimidation, humiliation, and work sabotage. It's anything but motivating. It's actually, it destabilizes a person. It prevents work from getting done. I guess the most popular thing that we deal with, the most frequent thing, is an abuse of performance appraisal. You'll get a new young supervisor coming in and singling out a veteran worker who has an established record of being the go-to expert. And then they call that person incompetent. And over a multi-month period, that they will deconstruct that person. They will tear them into shreds in their weekly meeting, eroding their confidence and their competence, and actually having them believe that they are actually unskilled. And just as Jonathan Martin talked about needing some emotional, dealing with his emotional issues, true laser-focused bullying causes a whole host of stress-related diseases, so it very much has health implications. So it's repeated health-harming mistreatment.
Dennis, what might you add to that?
Well, that in order to have protection, I noted in that Incognito situation that there's an allegation that the coaches put him up to it. I don't know where that will lead, but whenever you hear the talk about workplace bullying, one thing that affects me and what I'm doing with folks out there is that it has to be based on some kind of protected characteristic like race, which is in play here, age, sex, disability, and that type of thing.
Well, you know, as it relates, we don't have a deep understanding, obviously, of the situation in Miami, but I think it is kind of a good point, a good launching point for this conversation. And I, as it relates to the NFL, I just want to throw some expressions out there that I've been hearing. Well, boys will be boys. And I heard, I think it was the general manager actually allegedly told Mr. Martin's agent that he should just punch Incognito and resolve it that way. And I've been hearing other things like, well, it's just typical locker room behavior. Yeah. You know, it's more or less been dismissed by at least a few people out there.
Bill, that was the initial response. And indeed, Ireland and the coach Philbin and the line coach, specifically the new, brand new, first time in the NFL offensive line coach who dealt with Jonathan Martin and Incognito, probably lacked a lot of skill there. They set the tone, without a doubt. But after Monday Night Football game last night, I think the sports intelligentsia has come around now, and I base that on ESPN sports analysts, who were first apologists for Incognito. They've now branded that locker room culture style as Neanderthal, and they, including Steve Young, who's an attorney, and former quarterback 49ers. And he said, you know, it's all got to change. We wore leather helmets at one time in this sport. We ignored concussions one time in this sport. Okay, now it's time to get rid of the boys will be boys locker room culture. We don't have room for abuse. It's a violent enough game. So if that, from their words, from their lips, to the NFL. If that were to become true, that would be a major evolution.
I agree completely, and to put a little perspective on it, all of that rings true to what I've heard in the course of my career. Boys will be boys is something that you used to hear if a female tried to break into what was seen as a male-dominated workplace, like a fire, become a fireman or work in construction. Used to be that, well, that's just the way things are down here in the South. So that kind of defense or that kind of rationalization just doesn't work.
And my understanding is that the owner is going to sit down with Martin face-to-face today. So that plays to what you're saying, Dr. Gary Namy. I have to ask you, I was surprised when I learned that there was actually a workplace bullying institute.
We've been out here 16 years.
Yeah.
And it takes sometimes a connection to the NFL. This is our Columbine, if you will. We have so many suicides that don't make the news because of the complex nature of suicide. Even it takes a person who has to leave a suicide note saying, my boss drove me to this, and even then they're not believed. So in this case, the NFL is able to start this dialogue. But we've been here 16 years. It happened to my wife, you see, and it was, as Dennis said, it was woman on woman, and she had no protected grounds to make a complaint. And we were stunned that it was not illegal in the U.S. unless there's this discriminatory component. And there still isn't. There is no state in the U.S. that has passed a law for which we advocate. It's called the Healthy Workplace Bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's active right now in 11 states, but it's up against very, very strong opposition. But there are five Canadian provinces that have legislation, and they have a federal anti-bullying occupational health and safety regulation. Most of the Western industrialized nations have addressed this. The research has been around since the mid-80s. But America is lagging far, far behind because that toughness that we're now saying may not be so required in the NFL has no place in the American workplace, but that's part of our ethos, part of our individualism, that we're rugged, and therefore if you are bullied as an adult, you should be able to protect yourself. But that's not how it works. This is akin. I would like Dennis to comment on this. We have found that workplace bullying over the years with our research and all the international research is much more akin to domestic violence than it is kid bullying, student bullying in schools. You've got all the same patterns between the abuser and the abused. You've got the do-nothingness of witnesses, which is just an anathema for the poor target in the workplace. They can't get support. And then you've got institutions turning a blind eye toward it.
Dennis?
Yeah, and that's the sad thing. You know, everybody has policies that say things like, we do not tolerate any type of disrespectful conduct. And you'll see that in the policies. And yet the irony and the sad irony is that there's not a legal protection whereby you can really enforce that policy.
Do you have any statistics? This is whoever wants to field this, feel welcome to do so. What are the numbers that we're looking at? How widespread is this problem of bullying in the workplace?
54 million Americans. We've run two national scientific polls. Zogby has run the polls for us. We do research on bully targets all the time, but from the national, it's that definition I gave you, repeated mistreatment, taking the form of those behaviors, is something that's directly experienced by 35% of adult Americans. 9% currently, 26% historically, 15% witness it. I mean, 71 million Americans in the workforce know this firsthand, either by witnessing or direct experience. So it's quite an epidemic, but it is a silent epidemic, Bill, because it is typically an undiscussable in corporate America. They don't want to admit it.
Dennis, I read somewhere, and correct me if this is mistaken information, that 64% of it occurs between people of the same gender.
And it can, sure.
Those are our numbers, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And the odd thing, you know, what I've seen in the legal field is that companies have to make sure that they don't have just policies on paper. and actions speak louder than words. What you've got to do is don't just have policies. If you really believe that you want a productive workplace, train your employees to know, show them films on what constitutes bullying, and make it clear we don't tolerate it. Take action.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation, 235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. It's Bullies in the Workplace. And joining us from Kansas City, Missouri is David. You're on the air, David.
Hello.
Go ahead, sir.
How are you doing this? Yes. My personal experience is basically I had to pull myself out of the personal work relationships with the people, and I had to redirect my concentration and focus on the work and the duties involved in the actual work, which is why I was hired in the first place.
And that's going on now?
Not in my particular situation, but in my past situation, I have noticed the relevance of the bullying in the workplace. And I had to, like I say, I had to redirect my focus and not so much concentrate on personal relationships with coworkers as much as the actual work or duties themselves.
David, before we have our two experts respond, I want to ask you, did you take this situation, this problem, this challenge to a supervisor?
Yes, I did, and basically I had to document my duties and so forth instead of spending my time in communicating with coworkers and supervisors. I kept it more on a basic and simple level rather than get into the intricacies of personal relationships. I tried to keep it more basic and simple.
Well, let's get a response first from you, Dennis, if you would.
Well, are you able to do your work and not have to encounter the bullies by refocusing into your work? Because, you know, if you are, that's one way to cope with it. But for the vast majority of folks who are subjected to that, they just can't ignore or can't avoid it.
And Dr. Namey?
Yeah. Well, David engaged in basically self-isolation, and that's one of the biggest tactics, too. Another very prevalent tactic is ostracism. The coworkers will isolate you, and the brand-new neuroscience research shows that that actually causes physical pain as well as social pain, and it can be quite destructive. So while David's trying to not allow people to meddle with his work, the meddlers will come in and still try and interfere. They're very tenacious. And when it's coworkers, it's interesting. I'm glad you asked, Bill, if you took it to the boss. A lot of bosses don't know what to make of this. It looks like conflict. And if they go to human resources, they'll try and say, well, we should mediate this. But it's actually a form of workplace violence. It's not trivial. And it should not be mediated because you don't mediate violence. It's a non-physical form, according to NIOSH, non-physical form of workplace violence. But it's, I guarantee you, David has lost a lot of the, he's lost the fun of his job. He's lost the social joy that can come from the workplace because he's cut that off because they've cut it off. So it really makes for social misery.
Dennis,
I
believe
David would agree.
I think you asked a question of David and I cut him off. Could you repeat?
Sure. David, have you been able to avoid the perpetrators? You say that you're, you know, focusing on your work and kind of interdirecting. Are you able to avoid them?
No, it's not so much I'm able to avoid as much as I'm able to avoid the conflict and such involved in a more personalization. In other words, my job became more of my duties rather than the relationship with the coworkers. I kept on a simple level of communication rather than get sidetracked off into the intricacy. In other words, the communication I didn't I wasn't able to let that go, but I believe you're both right in that my isolating myself from the communication perhaps did resort in, you know, some personal damage or conflict with my inner self.
Sure, sure. And David, we certainly appreciate you calling in and sharing your story and bearing your soul for us this morning. And I think we all three wish him the best of luck. And hopefully their remedy is on the way.
Sure do. Good luck, David.
Gentlemen, what kind of dynamics are behind bullying? First of all, is it a certain personality? Is it somehow I'm raised inappropriately or in the wrong way, and I grow up to be a bully? Is it as simple as that? And Dennis, can I start with you?
Well, you can, but you know, sometimes in my work, I have to face irrational discrimination, and I often have to tell juries that I can't explain the irrational.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Dr. Namy has more insight on science, but I see that those that'll be the perpetrators can run the gamut. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, appearances are deceiving. Position is not a determinant. You can be high management. You can be co-worker, line worker. So it runs a gamut in that respect.
Dr. Namy?
I support Dennis completely. Some of the statistics, 72% of the bullies are bosses in America. That matches the 80% in Britain and Australia. So it's primarily top-down, 18% co-workers, 10% subordinates. They bully up the ladder. They do share, because we're America, we want to land on the personality explanation. And there are aspects of the perpetrator's personality. They are all narcissistic to some degree. They are all needing to control other people to some degree. And that's about all they have in common. The rest of them could be soccer moms who are simply, and 38% by gender, here's our gender statistics from 2010, 62% are men. But when it's a woman who is the perpetrator, she chooses another woman 80% of the cases. So it's extreme. There's a new Gallup poll released yesterday that women do not prefer women bosses. They prefer to have a man boss. And that's backed up also by our data where the women are bullied and tormented by other women. So you have the gender thing going on. But the personality thing is there's an interesting study just put out this September, published this September, about 10% of our population, these researchers estimate, are what they call everyday sadists, people who derive pleasure from harming others. And this seems to be growing. They're not psychopaths, but the point is that we seem to have crueler and crueler people.
Hmm.
I stick with the work environment explanation. I can take a perfectly healthy, normal, wonderful, nurturant church deacon, put them into the wrong environment, and they will become very aggressive. They will turn on others. They will be very bullies. And if all we have to do is reward the bullying, if that's what's rewarded, people are very smart and they'll follow that lead. If we can change, that's why the talk about the locker room culture is so important. Culture, the workplace culture. What's rewarded? What does management say from on high? What style do they want to see in people? Is a better explanation than personality alone, but you know what? You can't take the personality out completely.
Well, and something that follows up on that I do in my work, sexual harassment. You hear the term sexual harassment, and immediately a lot of folks think, well, it's about sex. And I think Dr. Namy would probably know that actually itself gets down to power. Harassment, sexual harassment, certainly supervisor over subordinate, is based on the fact that they can do what they do. And oftentimes it's scary how they're able to sniff out the vulnerable. And I mean, I see cases where females from a past where they've been abused as children, that they end up again and again being victimized by these sadists, I think was the term that Dr. Namy used. And I think that those who perpetrate this kind of conduct must have a little bit of that in them.
I'm fully aware that this happens across a broad spectrum, but are there specific industries that might be even more prone to this kind of behavior? And I'm thinking of the NFL as just one example. Dennis?
Yes. I mean, I think what we're seeing and what we're hearing and the rationalizations, boys will be boys, and you could probably turn on talk radio any day and hear lots of folks trying to excuse this. Important to point out that no workplace is immune from the law.
Mm-hmm.
And if workplaces were immune, then again, like I say, our society wouldn't have evolved from our time of terrible racism that we had in various parts of the country.
Bullies in the workplace, that's this morning's conversation on Central Standard. Have you been bullied? How did you handle it? 235-2888. I'm Bill Anderson with Dr. Gary Namy of the Workplace Bullying Institute and Dennis Egan, a trial lawyer for the Popham Law Firm. Chris is joining us from Lawrence. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a really dear friend here in Lawrence that is physically disabled. He has a pacemaker, and he also has some mental disabilities. And he's been hired by a restaurant here in town and is suffering horrible bullying, just terrible. His the assistant manager is cruel to him by words, by actions, making him do things that are he's unable to accomplish. Couldn't be accomplished, like scrubbing the dirty grout on the floors, trying to clean the grout, but doing it with a cloth and not giving him the proper supplies to do that, threatening him, following him when he goes to the bathroom, timing how long he's in there, telling him that he has to clock out if he wants a soda or something during the course of his work day. Before getting his soda, he has to clock out and then clock back in again. Just being really cruel to him.
Well, this sounds Chris, we're running short on time, so I'm going to cut you off here if you don't mind, and
sure.
So that way we can get our experts to respond here. Reprehensible behavior.
Absolutely, Chris. You need to advise your friend to seek out some legal advice. That is illegal. The kind of conduct that you're describing is not allowed, and if it's based on his disability, then of course your friend has a remedy.
Yeah, Dr. Okay. Namy.
Yeah, that's exactly Dennis's bailiwick. One in five bullying cases have some protected status basis, and really that's basically all you can use. I wanted to ask Dennis, I think it would be great if he told the audience about the intentional infliction of emotional distress and how hard that is to pull, because we do have a tort law that somewhat applies, but it's really tough. Because I think people need to hear this, because nothing's outrageous in America.
Well, that's right. Intentional infliction of emotional distress. It's what we call a common law tort that's recognized in just about every state. But to make that tort, you have to come up with proof that not many courts have found to be sufficient. Intentional conduct, it has to be such that the normal person hearing it will immediately say, outrageous. And there's many forms of conduct that have been put before the courts and determined not to be outrageous, unfortunately.
Isn't it true that about a third of the people who get bullied ultimately quit? And isn't that what the desired outcome is on behalf of the people perpetrating the crime?
Yeah, yes, it
that's
is.
That's partly it. Yeah, we have the stats on that, too. 28% quit voluntarily, but 25% are terminated. Usually based on the specious grounds of, as I told you before, the lying about performance appraisal. They'll put a person on an improvement plan, put them back on probation despite their 22 years experience, and within 6 months to a year, they will be objectively a poorer performer, and they'll throw them out. So that's termination. Or constructive discharge, where they're made so miserable. That's 25% also. That they want to get out of there for their sanity, and they are driven out. It looks like a voluntary quit.
We have time.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say we have time for one more phone call, and this is an important one, and so I needed to cut you off, and I apologize
okay.
for that. Eddie's joining us. Hi, Eddie. Quickly.
Hi. I'm used to be a construction worker. I don't do it because bullying had got so extensive. With me, not only by me being black, being discriminated against. I didn't know it was also being bullied. To say the least, construction bullying go on a lot with the supervisors and the superintendents to make you get more work done, you know. And in my case, because I was black, I thought it was just being discriminated against, but I was, you know, he would always just pick on me, try to holler at me in front of people, and because I'm a bigger black guy, if I was to come back on him, he would use that as a means to say it was me, that I was the problem.
Well, Eddie, let's have Dennis respond to your situation.
It's not you. You're not the problem, but and that's a typical description, a typical scenario that you're describing.
And Dr. Namey, any closing thoughts on Eddie's predicament?
No, two messages. One is it is not you. You did not cause it. You did nothing to cause it, and you're not alone.
That's right.
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately, and I want to thank Dennis Egan, a trial lawyer for the Popham Law Firm.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And Dr. Gary Namey of the Workplace Bullying Institute will have information on our website, kcur.org, about your work and about the institute.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for being here. Tune in tomorrow for Central Standard. We explore raising children gender neutral. Up to Date is next with the Media Critics. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Sydney Llewellyn and Ross Steinmetz. I'm Bill Anderson. This is Central Standard on KCUR.